Hi, I'm Hallie Ritsu.
And I'm Allison Friedman.
And we're the hosts of Personal Jurisdiction, a podcast geared towards helping law students and lawyers explore the variety of career paths available to JDs.
And my name is Jonah Perlin, and I'm the host of the How I Lawyer podcast, which is a podcast that interviews lawyers from across the profession about what they do, why they do it, and how they do it well.
This month, May 2022, our podcasts are joining together to feature interviews that focus on a key topic facing our profession, mental health.
Although it's not talked about nearly enough, lawyers have long faced serious mental health challenges. And in many instances, these challenges begin during law school and increase throughout lawyers' careers.
And the COVID-19 pandemic has amplified these challenges in ways that we're only now just learning about.
We are obviously not mental health professionals, nor are we able to solve these problems. That said, we're hoping to use our podcast platforms to connect you, our listeners, to lawyers who have thought deeply about these topics and in some cases have gone through their own challenges too.
We hope you learn from these interviews and that they can further destigmatize the conversation about mental health in the legal profession, and maybe even provide you with some tools and inspiration in your own journey.
So this month, no matter which of our podcast feeds you listen to, you'll hear the same series of interviews centered on this important topic of mental health. So for example, How I Lawyer listeners, you'll get a chance to hear interviews hosted by my friends from Personal Jurisdiction. And Personal Jurisdiction listeners will get to hear some interviews that I hosted.
Also, just a heads up that next month, both shows will return to their regularly scheduled programming.
We hope you enjoy and gain something from these interviews, and we hope you'll interact with us on social media, including on Twitter, where you can find us at PersonalJXPod.
And you can find me at Jonah Perlin.
You can also subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts or on LinkedIn.
And a quick word of thanks to LawPods for editing and engineering this introduction and the How I Lawyer-based episodes.
And thanks to you for listening.
Welcome back to Mental Health Awareness Month, a collaboration between the Personal Jurisdiction and How I Lawyer podcasts. Today, we welcome two exciting guests to the podcast, Bridget Carr and Vivek Sankaran, who happen to be some of my colleagues at Michigan Law. At the suggestion of Bridget and Vivek, the introductions that follow are a bit more vulnerable than just their academic bios. We think you'll see why as you listen to this episode. So without further ado,
Bridget Carr is a clinical professor of law and the associate dean for strategic initiatives at the University of Michigan Law School. She is also the founding director of the law school's Human Trafficking Clinic, the first clinical program solely devoted to addressing this issue comprehensively. Bridget is also a first-gen college graduate who wasn't sure law school was for her. She didn't do a journal or apply for a clerkship, and instead spent her spare time during law school working at a local legal aid office and an asylum shelter. Despite now being an expert on human trafficking, Bridget hadn't heard of human trafficking work until after she graduated from law school. Vivek Sankaran is also a clinical professor of law at the University of Michigan Law School. He directs both the Child Advocacy Law Clinic and the Child Welfare Appellate Clinic, through which law students represent children and parents in trials and appellate proceedings. He is also a father of three boys, he loves coaching youth sports, and he is learning to play the guitar.
Most importantly for our episode today, Professors Carr and Sankaran have jointly created a novel course for Michigan law students called Designing a Fulfilling Life in the Law. The course asks students to consider what they want out of life after law school and how they can create that life. The course applies innovative principles of problem solving to the concept of designing your life in and beyond law school. They also recently launched an exciting new business called Law Life Prof Coaching to help lawyers in practice build a toolbox for a fulfilling life. We can't wait to engage with Bridget and Vivek about some of the tools they recommend for designing a fulfilling life in the law. Enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. We are back for our second episode in the Mental Health Awareness Month series. And today we are so excited to welcome Bridget Carr and Vivek Sankaran to the show. Hi, Bridget. Hi, Vivek. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Allison. We're excited to be here.
I just want to jump right into it. You both obviously have been clinical law professors for some time working with students in your awesome clinics, but recently you also designed a new course called Designing a Fulfilling Life in the Law. I'm curious why you set out to create the course and kind of how it's unfolded.
Sure. So we really created it because it was the class we needed in law school, but didn't know we needed it. And once we figured that out, created it. I think that's half the things I do now are sort of what did my law school self need and wish I had? Vivek and I really went on our own designing a fulfilling life journey for ourselves, the two of us. We were meeting with people that we admired and trying to learn from them. We had gotten to this point in our career and we thought, is this it? Have we, quote unquote, arrived? And we're not sure that we're the happiest we could be or the most fulfilled. And so when we started that journey, we realized that this isn't like a secret, right? The way to have a more fulfilling life is really a skill set. And neither Vic or I changed our jobs, but we are fundamentally different from acquiring the skill set. And then once we realized it was a skill set, we thought, gosh, we need to help the law students we teach right now get these skills earlier than we got them. And so the class was born.
Just to add to that, you know, one of the things we tell our students is that there's no yellow brick road. And what we mean by that is like so much of our life as law students and then lawyers is about chasing accolades that we think if we follow all these things will lead us to like this place, right? And so I think I fell into that trap, right? You get to law school and you're like, okay, I gotta do a law review and I gotta work at a firm and I gotta go get a clerkship and I gotta go get a fellowship and I gotta go do these things. And then you're gonna hit the age of like 40 or 45. And if you do these things, you're just gonna magically be happy till you get to be like 40 or 45. And you're like, oh, really? Like this is how it's supposed to feel at the end of it? And you realize quickly that there's a much different journey out there that you could be taking that I should have been taking years ago. That doesn't involve chasing a bunch of things that for me don't define happiness and flourishing and success. And so really encouraging our students to jump off that track as soon as they can to start defining it. And I think that's, you know, as Bridget talked about our own journeys, like I think that in a way we're trying to jump off that track or have jumped off that track of letting other people define for us what success and happiness and joy looks like for us. But it's something that I certainly fell a victim of it in law school, and so many of our students do as well.
Yeah, so I think that ties into actually the name of the course. So I'm curious if you guys were, I'm assuming, very intentional about the name of it, right? Designing a Fulfilling Life in the Law. As you said, right, following this yellow brick road, checking the sort of boxes, getting to the next thing is what a lot of us have done. I know Hallie and I both did that and have now, including with this podcast, tried to break out of that and varied our journeys a little bit. But I'm curious what it means to you to design a fulfilling life and why you chose that name specifically for the course.
Yeah, I think for me, it really conveys the word design, a level of intentionality. Because I think what law students, when they get to law school, they often lack the intentionality. And you think about it, it starts with like why people go to law school. So many people go to law school because they just have nothing else that they necessarily want to do. And someone told them that it's a good degree to have because it opens lots of doors. And you hear that a lot, right? It's a really expensive degree to have to open lots of doors if you don't really want the skill set. And so we want to introduce this idea of we need to step back and really be intentional. And so I think the word design came from that. I think the word fulfilling came from our strong belief that you can be a lawyer and have a fulfilling life, and that you can be a law student and have a fulfilling life. Bridget once chastised me on a panel because I said something like, all right, so here's how you survive law school. This was years ago. And she's like, not survive. Like survive is something that you like, it's like boot camp or something that is like a dreadful experience. And we should aim for much, much, much higher when it comes to law school. And let's talk about thriving in law school. And that's where I think the word fulfilling came from that.
Yeah, I think also the word fulfilling was intentional, that it wasn't just happiness. We wanted to make it really clear that, you know, happiness is a positive emotion, but fulfillment or thriving is bigger than that. It's about well-being, and it involves positive emotion for sure, but it's not just a fake sense of sort of toxic positivity. So it's bigger than the emotion. It's also meaning and purpose and engagement and meaningful connections to people in your life that you care about and who care about you.
I'm glad you mentioned, Bridget, the idea of toxic positivity. And I think that really feeds into the idea that we should just throw out about finding your passion. Because what you're showing your students here is it's really about the journey. You're not going to magically, like you said, Vivek, be 45 and a partner in a law firm and be like, oh, February 25th, I'm happy today. It happened. Here I am. Can you tell us a little bit about how you encourage that in your students in this course?
Yeah, I love how you identify the rejection of this like find your passion mindset, because we talk about that in our class, which is you don't just kind of go grasping thin air like what your passion is, because most of us don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Right. And so what we try to teach our students is you try stuff. You try stuff and pay attention to how you feel after you do it to figure out like what energizes you, what don't you like. And I think law school, for the law students in your audience, is like the perfect time to do that. Right? Don't walk into law school thinking, I want to be a child welfare lawyer or human trafficking. Like, come to law school thinking, this is a 3-year experiment for me to figure out what brings me alive so I can enter the workforce closer to a sense of what brings me to life. And so that's what we encourage our students to try clinics and externships and take classes and interesting professors and whatever it might be, and then build a practice of reflection to figure out. But some of my favorite students took my clinic, and at the end of it, they're like, that wasn't fun at all. I did not like court. I didn't enjoy it. I don't want to be a litigator. It gives me a pit in my stomach and I don't get the high after the trial. And so, and I'm like, well, this is a gift to yourself. Like, this is a great, I'm so glad you did this, because you're not going to now go be a litigator. And like, wow, I wish most of us had that intel about us. And so really this sort of culture of trying stuff and paying attention to your emotions and not faking positivity, right? Mm-hmm. We really discourage that. You know, I think that we both believe that joy and pain can coexist, but like our lives are all full of both. And by denying those experiences that make us sad or upset or angry, we're not really giving ourselves a chance to be our full selves, because that's an important part of all of our lives.
What would you all say to students who maybe want to try things, but think that only certain things are worthy of trying or are being influenced by their peers and say, oh, well, you know, if you don't do a judicial externship during your 1L summer, then, you know, who are you? There's so many opportunities out there, but I think there's also a lot of pressure and certain things are viewed as more prestigious than others. So how do you encourage students to try things, but not only things that might be viewed in a light as prestigious or what you should be doing?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is that if you're doing something because you feel like you should, to pause. Brené Brown says that should is just could with shame. And so we want to stop when we hear that word and say, why am I doing this? But I think the bigger question is all of these messages about prestige and clerkships and really anything that tells you that there is one prescribed path, you need to pause and say, whose definition of success am I working under? Because doing law review, seeking out a clerkship, working in a certain city, working at a certain place, may be the exact right thing for the person sitting next to you in law school, but it might not be the right thing for you. And so I'm always sad when I see law students who have a variety of backgrounds, really interesting life stories, who come to law school after doing tons of different things, and then all think they need to do the exact same thing. What is it? Like, why do we think that
couldn't possibly be the case?
Right, that we all need to do the exact same thing. And so many students come to my office and say, should I do a journal? Should I do a clerkship? And I say, I don't know. What's your goal? Where do you want to go? What do you want to get out of it? And I don't think we teach the skill of reflection enough in law school, because that's really what it's asking for, right? So look, walking away from prestige is hard. By the time we've gotten to law school, we are all a little bit prestige addicts, right? Like we're already there. But the earlier we can start to recognize that and say, do I want to do this because this energizes me? It matches my values. It meets a need I have about being around family or whatever that is. Or am I doing this because I think I'm going to get that little dopamine hit that says, like, this is a thing other people want? Because here's the real kicker. That dopamine hit is so short-lived, right? And then we go, we need the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
So Bridget and I have started coaching lawyers as sort of an extension from our work with law students. We've started a coaching business. And I would say that one of the overwhelming attributes of those that we've worked with is they have chased external attributes for years and years and years and years. And their resumes are stellar, right? They look like they have just conquered the legal world. But I think there comes a point where they realize that if you need those external recognition, if you need that all the time, it is a recipe for living in a very unhappy life. And those lawyers that have succeeded in flourishing in their lives and in the law have shifted to finding intrinsic things that they control. So like things like relationships or right? Like things that they're using now to define success in a much different way. But if you're constantly looking for the next accolade, you're never going to meet the quench that thirst. And that's so hard because we started in law school. We start pouring the awards and the accolades. And so you just constantly want that next thing. And I think it reprograms our brains to want to chase all the time. And it's really hard to undo it. But I think it's one of those basic things that students have to start doing or else it leads to an unhappy career.
Can you tell us what habits law students might be able to start building to maybe break this cycle of the just short dopamine hit and the next accolade and following the Olympic road, climbing the ladder, however you want to call it? What are some healthy habits? You mentioned trying things, which of course is really important. Lots of our guests talk about how they found their career, both through trying things they liked and, as you said, Vivek, through things that they absolutely did not like also. But are there other things that law students can do to start to cultivate healthy habits around finding a fulfilling life in the law?
Sure. I think the first thing I want to say is that we always talk about our class, and I would talk about this answer in the same way, that there are a buffet of options. Right? There are so many habits that you could incorporate, and not everything on the buffet is what you like. You're not going to like all the habits. But I think what happens is we all want to be told exactly what to do, right? I want someone to tell me the 7 things I can do to lead a fulfilling life.
Yes.
and that's, it's not how it works.
Like a BuzzFeed article.
Right, right.
Just give me a checklist. Yeah.
But that's how it works.
That's what got us here in the first place. So
right. There's no checklist. And that's both a burden, right? Because we want it, but it's also a gift in the long term, meaning you can figure out what works for you. So in the class, we definitely teach lots of different habits. Many of them would not be new to your listeners, right? Mindfulness, reframing, a gratitude practice, movement, creativity, play. But one of the key things we do in our class, and one of the key things I want to pass on to your listeners, is a habit without reflection, you're not learning. Right? You need to figure out, does this habit energize me? Does it work for me? Maybe meditation is your thing and you commit to it and you do it every day and it really works for you. But for others, it might not work, or you need to find a different way to do it. So I just think we can't talk about these habits if we're not talking about reflection.
The other thing I would say is also for students to get in the mindset that law school is the beginning of the rest of your life. And so I think too often students are like, it's just 3 years. And then I'm going to go and start working on being healthy like after law school is done. And I think what you miss in that thinking is, A, like you probably have more time in law school than you will when Definitely. You start getting out of law school, right?
Just like, a shocking revelation to most of
you. Nothing like being in school.
I still remember when I was in law school, I'm like, oh, I can't wait till I start working because I'll just work and then I'll be done with work. And then I'm like, and then you stumble into the work world and you're like, this isn't what it's like at all. And so Bridget hit the main things. You know, we try to bucket our advice to law students in like 3 big buckets. Like one is the idea of being curious, which is really developing practices, whatever they might be, to reflect about yourself and what you want and always being open to new possibilities, right? So always looking around. Like there's been so many studies out there about people who think of themselves as lucky are so much more likely to spot opportunities than those who think the world is sort of happening to them, right? One of my favorite studies in the world is like, there was like, people were paid to count newspaper headlines in a newspaper. And they had, before they did that, they ranked themselves 1 to 10 on the luckiness scale. And unbeknownst to the people in the study, like headline number 4 said, if you read this headline, stop, don't read anything else, and you get paid like twice as much as the rest of the people. And then they correlated between the people who viewed themselves as lucky with those who found that headline. And it was an enormous, it was a statistically significant, like very significant correlation. But it makes sense that you run into these people who are always looking around for like interesting, exciting things and making connections and really being open-minded. And so one is we want law students to sort of embrace that mindset of just being curious and always open to new possibilities, trying stuff, right? Try stuff. Don't worry about whether you're good at it. One of my favorite law students right now came to me and she's like, I don't think I'm any good at oral advocacy. I want to be a litigator, but I think I stink at it. First of all, she didn't stink at it. You know, Allison, I know in the clinics, you probably have millions of students who like talk about themselves like that. And so what did I do? My face lit up and I'm like, oh, I have an exciting opportunity for you. I have an oral argument at the Court of Appeals next month. You're going to do it. And I'm going to give you a credit or two. Yes. And the look of terror on her face. And I'm like, what's the worst that can happen? You don't do a great job of it. You're still going to be better than most lawyers doing an oral argument. And it's going to be fun. And we're going to prep. And she like got over her nerves, tried it, and totally rocked it. And it really opened this door of like, oh, maybe I am good at this thing or not, you know, not as bad as it. And I just want students to get in this mindset of like trying stuff. And then I think one of the most important buckets is staying connected with each other and with faculty. And so what I mean by that is, you know, when I was in law school, I never thought of my classmates as like folks I could learn from. It was always like a hierarchical vision of what learning meant. And I wish I had a different embrace, which was to learn from each other, because now my classmates are doing like incredible groundbreaking things. And I didn't even see them in that light. And so I think the most important thing that law students can leave out of law school with is the relationships that they form with. It could be 2, 3, 4 people, like real relationships.
Yeah.
And then find those professors that light you up, mm-hmm. right? Every law school has the folks that you're going to connect with and just get to know them on a human level. Because I think that you're going to leave law school in a much better place if you've done those things than anything. Like, who can remember what you learned in first year torts? Like, no idea.
Not me.
And I hate the students who are like, and this is the should comment, who are like, I have to take, like, I was told in law school that I had to take corporations. So I took corporations and I was miserable taking corporations. And after law school, how much have I used corporations in my legal identity? Like, zero. I still know nothing about corporations. And reject this. Like, people hear these pieces of advice all the time and they're like, okay, if you want to do public interest work, you should never work at a law firm because that's going to brand you. I worked both my summers at law firms. And yep. The person who wrote my recommendation letter for my public interest job was a partner at the law firm who talked about how he knew my heart was not in firm work, but was in public interest work. And he supported it wholeheartedly. And he had contacts and connections because he did pro bono work. And I'm like, the world isn't linear. And yet we try to act because we want control over a world that we don't really have that level of control over. And so there's a whole different mindset that I think we need to embrace in light of that.
Yeah. It reminds me, Bridget, of a tweet from your feed last week, I think, that kind of just took my breath away, which was a poem that one of your students wrote reflecting on your course. And one of the lines was about throwing away the stencil. And I was just like, wow, this person really gets it. And I'm so excited for them because they're getting something so early on in their legal career that's hopefully going to be able to save them, you know, a little bit of time and heartache in discovering different things that are fulfilling to them in their career. And I loved that image of throwing away the stencil.
I did too. And I think, you know, it really captures so much of the framing that we often come into law school with, that there is one right way. I mean, we hear it from our students and the lawyers we work with that people change their lives once they have this skill set. It doesn't mean they leave their jobs. It sometimes means that, right? Yeah. It does sometimes mean that. Mm-hmm. But even one of our students this semester in our class shared in our show and tell at the end that with the support of the class and his small group, right, his little community that he created, he changed jobs. He was going to walk down sort of a traditional legal path, and instead he's going into legal tech, and it's a startup, and he doesn't know what's going to happen, but he is excited and energized by it. And most importantly, I feel like he knows that if that doesn't work, something else will. He'll find something else. He'll make a different plan.
Exactly. I don't know where we get the mindset that we can't do something and then do something else, or do something that doesn't work out and do something else. it's really cool to hear that your students are breaking through that mindset that's not helpful at all.
I think one of the things we try to instill also is a little bit of like the entrepreneurial mindset for students, because I think that oftentimes they just limit their options by like this or that or that or that. And instead, they don't sit back and think about, well, what do I want this to look like? Because I think what we have found, especially as you get out of law school, is people are limited by their own lack of creativity, like employers. And like when you propose something that's like creative and interesting and different, oftentimes the world is like, oh yeah, we can do that. I just never thought about that before. I think of like going to, you know, one of our favorite places to eat is the Zingerman's Roadhouse in Ann Arbor. And I love it because when I brought our kids there the first time, they were like, well, I can't order the burger with bacon on it because it's not explicitly on the menu. And I'm like, just ask, just ask. And of course they're like, we can do whatever you want. We can't put everything on the menu. And it's the same way, like employers or law school can't put everything in life on a menu, right? That we hand to you. And so we have to propose new things. And it's really teaching students that muscle, which lawyers are so good at that in like any other problem solving context mm-hmm. for other people, but we don't do that for ourselves.
What are some of the ways, thinking about the buffet that you all talked about, what are some of the ways that students can start to build these habits? What do you coach your students to do in your course or some of the exercises that you take part in?
Right. So I think there's so many, but one of the ones that I think resonates with students a lot, we do something called energy mapping, because it can be really easy to say to someone, well, choose more things that light you up, or what do you enjoy doing? But for some folks, the answer is, I don't know what I like. Like, I'm not sure what energizes me. I haven't stopped to answer that question. And so we walk them through an exercise that really gets them to use reflection, right? To think on your day, what lights you up, what kind of drains you. And rather than say, like, just cut all the things that drain you, because that's not possible in lots of our lives. We can cut some things, but we can't cut everything. Mm-hmm. We say things like, okay, how can we optimize the conditions for the things that you like? Can we make them even more energizing and put you into a state called flow, right? Where you sort of lose track of time and you're just in it. Kids are in flow a lot if you see them playing, right? The other thing we do is we say, here are a lot of little micro moves you can do for things you don't like to potentially make them more energizing for you. Can you combine it with something else? Can you time restrict it? Can you move it around in a different part of your day? If your day is starting in a way that's very an energy drain, is there something you can do to change that? And I think that you learn a lot from that exercise. And then you start taking that mindset of, here's what's happening. Here's what's working. How can I maximize? How can I reflect? How can I sort of try to change some of the things that don't work? And we find that students really enjoy that exercise.
Well, I think our exercises are really like on a micro level and then on a macro level as well. So Bridget yes. identified, I think, a really good micro activity that students love because they can start doing it right now. On the macro level, I think we start with helping students identify their values about, and we have an exercise about like what they want out of their life and what they want out of their jobs, and get them to explore whether there's any tension about what they want in each. Then we start getting them in the mindset that there's not just one path for them. We have a life design sort of exercise where we ask them to outline three different future selves, sort of journey, we call it journey mapping. And so one is like the road that they're kind of on. The other is, if road one can't happen, what's the second journey? And then the third is like money, prestige isn't an object. What would you do? And we specifically like the third because it actually, one of the beautiful things about the class is you realize that our students and all of us are so much more than our lawyering identities. And so you yes. just learn that we have like poets and artists and athletes and just like the craziest things like that we would never, ever, ever know. And then the glow on how our students light up when they're talking about these other parts of themselves is so, so, so powerful that I love it. And then we do this really fun exercise that we ask them to pick then one of the three paths and then come up with a specific way to prototype it. And then they have to write on a piece of paper their what they want to prototype. And then they put it on sticky papers all around the room. And then the entire class, we spent about half an hour walking around, giving specific suggestions about how they can move forward on their ideas. And I just love that class for so many reasons. One is like the vulnerability to even put on a piece of paper. what it is that you want to do. Second, harnessing the power of the room, you realize that people are like, oh, I was an author, you know, before I came to law school, or I worked on this campaign, or I know so-and-so. And you're like, you're surrounded by superstars who can make your dreams a reality. And so those are just some of the things that I think students have really enjoyed about the process.
One of the things that keeps popping into my head is the word individuality throughout this conversation. I think both in the sense of who you were before law school, you had this whole person, right, before you decided you wanted to actually go to law school, and then also including the path that you want to take after law school. And I think both of those things, if, as we said, if you reflect and if you do some of these exercises, which I wish, as you said, I wish I had had this class in law school to have these exercises. But both of those things really tie into like individuality and who you are as a whole person, not just who you are stripped down as a law student, who you are stripped down as a lawyer afterwards. And so I love the idea of bringing your full self into your lawyer persona in addition.
Yeah, we try when we introduce ourselves to introduce ourselves in a way that doesn't lead always with our lawyering hats, right? I mean, if you think about like what's important to me right now in my life at the stage that I'm at, it's like husband, father of three awesome kids. I'm a part of a small community that gives me so much energy where I have coached like hundreds of kids in various sports. And then I'm a lawyer too, right? And the lawyering part is an important part of my life. But I don't know if it's any more important than the other hats I wear. Like, I'm glad that I'm able to, I have a job I love and I impact people in so many different ways, but it's just a small part of who I am. And I think we try to like remind students of that a lot, because in law school, you're asked often implicitly or explicitly to forget about those other aspects of who you are. And for so many of us, like, that's what fills us up. Right. We talk to our students about whether you want a job, a career, or a calling. Right. A job is kind of like what my dad had, right? Which is you kind of go to work and you come home, and like there was no filling his soul out of that job. Career is like you're interested in advancement a little bit. And then calling is, you know, I think of like Bryan Stevenson, right? And like it is liberating for students to hear that your job as a lawyer can be a job. It doesn't have to be your calling. It's okay. For many of us, it is. And that's fine, because your calling could be serving your church or doing something completely. And that the law in your job gives you the financial stability to go do what you're here to do. And I think we just need to be talking about that so often, because a lot of the unhappiness we see is like people trying to create a calling for something that it's not a calling for them.
I also think, you know, and I try really hard to do this, that when we are introduced, whether I'm giving a talk or somewhere, and you read my bio, it reads as if, like, upon birth, I was anointed to found and lead the Human Trafficking Clinic, and that it was a straight line, and I never wavered. And
wait, you weren't born that way?
I know. And so I actually try doing now what I call my vulnerability introduction. I let people introduce me that way. But then I share a little bit more about the real path, that I'm a first generation college student, that I hated where I went to college, that I went to med school for 5 days and dropped out, that I had never even heard the phrase human trafficking while in law school, and that I really don't know what the next decade of my career will bring. And so I try to push back against this narrative that those of us in certain positions have known from since day one what we wanted to do with our lives.
I want to shift gears to your coaching business, Law Life Prof Coaching. And Vivek, you mentioned earlier that you've worked with a lot of seasoned lawyers who have maybe been chasing accolades and have not been particularly satisfied or fulfilled in their career. So how did you guys decide to branch out from law students in your course and offer this to anyone who's a lawyer?
I think it started really when we were describing what we were offering to law students, to alums or young lawyers or just friends who happen to be lawyers. So many reacted by saying they wish they had had something like this while they were at law school or even right now. And so Bridget and I are not business people. We're not like... like, that's the biggest understatement in the world. But I think part of it is like almost, you know, for me, it was trying to practice what we preach. which is this idea of, we have no idea how to do any of this stuff, like forming an LLC or, you know, community. We have no clue.
But you did take corporations. Maybe if you had paid a little more attention.
This was your chance.
That was my chance. That is true. So we're like, let's just do it. Let's go out there. Absolutely. And I have to say, it has been so rewarding on so many levels, because you get to know human beings on an incredibly deep individual level in a way that I don't know that many people as well as I know the people we work with. And you see the struggle, but you also see how phenomenal people are and how willing they are to embrace vulnerability and seek help. And it's been so, like, we have a range of folks at different stages of their careers. You know, some folks who need help reframing their current job and may stay at their jobs, but just need a different way of looking at it. Others who clearly need a different pivot because of a toxic work environment. But I think too often what lawyers do is, rather than spend the time to reflect about what the next move should be, they just like look at postings and they're like, this looks good. And they just apply for them. And then they end up in the same trap that they were in before because they realize this wasn't a right fit. And so I really applaud lawyers who are willing, who are unhappy, who are willing to take the time to explore the root causes of their unhappiness and options as to how to address it. Really, what we're doing is just creating space for reflection and asking lots of questions, pushing people, but you'll never hear from us, you should do this or that. Because I think that's what people want.
Yeah, but I
want it. I want people to tell me what to do every day because I don't want to make hard choices. So that's kind of the genesis of how we got to where we are. Bridget, what would you add?
I think the thing I would add is that someone looking at our careers could think we're clinical professors and then we teach this class and it's very disconnected. And I don't think that at all. I am always in awe of my clients who share this really hard experience with me. And my goal is to make them feel seen and heard. When I teach any of my classes, my goal is to make sure my students feel seen and heard. And when I coach lawyers who are really trying to puzzle through some complex questions that we as a society don't give space for, I want them to feel seen and heard. And what an honor when people trust that to us and are vulnerable with us. And the other piece is just, I'm really energized when I get to collaborate with Vivek. So we have a lot of fun. It is fun working with him to think about how we can help people be a little happier, find a little bit more joy. Because the other piece that really weighs heavy on me is that we know the data. Your listeners know the data, right? People come to law school happy and then something happens to them, something that we as part of the legal education system do to people makes them anxious, stressed, depressed, more likely to abuse substances. And so I feel a personal responsibility to try to counteract some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest, Hallie and I also love collaborating with each other and started this podcast out of a similar vein to really try to help people find a career that's fulfilling by hopefully putting out a lot of different options, and so that people can see that there isn't a yellow brick road, there isn't just one mm-hmm. path, and that the resume that you may be reading from someone, as you said, both of your resumes are incredibly impressive. If you just looked at that, you would have no idea what actually went into the behind the scenes of, you know, your day-to-day life and how you ended up taking this trajectory.
Allison, I think one of the things we try to push is also like work can be fun mm-hmm. and learning can be fun. And I think Bridget and I experience that when we work with each other, like, right, there's laughing and there's excitement. And we try to generate that in class as well, right? We have music in class and we're loud and lots of group work. And I mean, I am a strong believer that like this is how learning happens best and this is how good work happens too. And I think that's just a little bit of a shock to a lot of our students who are expecting the learning has to happen in this like formal environment, and really, again, thinking outside the box if we can.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that about our podcast too, Allison, because I think it's not like we have 10 million listeners, not yet, but it's something that we do because we really enjoy spending the time together because we're not in the same place anymore. And we really enjoy bringing these different stories to whoever is out there listening. It's fun. It doesn't have to be lucrative.
That's right. I think we as a society, especially as a legal profession, have a narrative that only at the very tip top are you making impact. Mm-hmm. I was working with a student who was telling me she really doesn't think she wants to be like a courtroom lawyer, but cares about policy, but that she had done some international policy level stuff and it wasn't fulfilling. But everything she was saying is she likes to be a member of a community. She likes to engage with people. She likes to see the tangible impact of the work she does. And I said, have you talked to someone who does like state level or even local community level policy work? Because I was thinking she's such a good fit for her. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely sense this experience she was having in her body, which is like, oh, but like, is that big? And like, I went to Michigan Law. Like, is that big enough? Is that bold enough? Is that prestigious enough? And trying to be able to, right, get yourself unhooked from that dopamine machine of prestige, it's hard.
For some of your clients or even some of our listeners who might be saying like, uh-oh, yes, I have definitely been chasing the prestige. I have definitely been climbing the ladder rung by rung, and I have what outwardly appears to be a very successful career, but I don't feel fulfilled internally. What's one concrete step or a few steps that someone in that position could maybe think about taking right away?
So the first thing I would say is don't beat yourself up, right? Accept where you are. It's okay, right? A lot of those skills that got you to where you are will be some of the same skills that you rely on to help you find something that's more fulfilling. And again, it doesn't mean you have to leave your job. So that's the first thing is don't beat yourself up, accept where you are. Also accept that you don't have to spend 17 hours a day trying to improve things, right? I think we, us type A folks who get ourselves into law school, often think if I can't do it all in, marathon level training is not worth doing. Right? So, and that is definitely so not the case. There's a really great story about one of Peloton instructors, Robin, who she was a lawyer before. And she talks about how in her lawyering life, she would spend 10 minutes a day sort of envisioning or working towards a different life. And she wrote down a list of things she wanted in a future job that really didn't exist when she wrote it down. Peloton didn't exist. And now you read it and it's as if she manifested her role at Peloton. But she did it. She 10 minutes a day, right? Contributing to thinking about working towards something she wanted more. So even if that 10 minutes a day is a walk where you're not listening to anything else and you're just listening to what's happening around you, or you decide to spend 1 minute a day meditating, or you decide to have a daily practice of writing down three things you're grateful for. Accept where you are, start small, and don't beat yourself up. What am I missing, Vivek? What would you advise?
All of those things are great. And I think it starts with reflection too, which is figuring out what is it that's causing you stress, unhappiness, whatever it might be, because I think that it's going to help you figure out where you need to go next. And I think first convincing yourself that there is another life that's possible, because so many lawyers are convinced that by signing up to be a lawyer, you are signing up to a life of misery, right? Like that's how, or like there's just no
it's
other
just
way.
So sad.
It's so sad, but like, it's also true. Like it does danger. So what happens though, is we've actually encountered a number of people who actually have like the law jobs of their life, which is like they're making some impact, but they're not working that hard. And yet because of this narrative we've introduced about what lawyers should be doing, and in air quotes, you feel like you're not doing something right when you have free time. You're like, well, so it's a really pernicious sort of habit. And I see that within all of the spaces that we're in, right? When you tell somebody that you have time, or that you went on a great trip, or you're going to spend the afternoon going on a long walk, they look at you like you feel like you're doing something wrong. And so I think finding a couple of people that you can, that you can talk to about these things openly, and forming a little community of like-minded folks is like an easy first pivot to try to have folks who reflect on stuff with you in a very different way than you're probably used to.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I remember in my first job, I went and rafted the Grand Canyon with my dad for a week. And there's no, amazing. There's no cell phone service. You know, you have to check out. And I remember feeling so guilty about going on the trip and not being able to disconnect for a few days and feeling like that crazy buzz of like, oh my gosh, I should be doing something. I shouldn't be allowing myself to take this trip. And then getting back and also not feeling like I could share the experience with other people because I thought that they would judge me, whether they would or not. It was something that I had internalized and just felt like I couldn't share it and that I felt guilt while I was on the trip. And I think that's when one of the turning points where I really started to reflect on like, is this the right environment for me to be in? But it's true, that idea of just feeling the guilt or shame when you take free time and actually do things outside of your job is something I think that can be imparted to us, unfortunately.
Definitely, Allison. And I think it's so important too to remember that you likely won't have the ability to change the culture of the entire place you work at. I don't have the ability to change the entire culture of the place I work. Vivek and I don't have that ability. But I experience a different culture at my job because I am connected to Vivek and others where, right, I send him things if I feel like something went well and he celebrates with me. I can tell him about a trip. And so I think one of the things that can be hard is you can look around and go, this is too big, too much for me to change it. But if you actually change the people that you spend most of your time connecting to, it really can have a massive positive impact on your life.
I love that. Yeah. And I have found that in my current space. So I just also wanted to touch on a couple of things that some of our guests have brought up over the course of the season. The first is this idea of giving yourself permission to close some doors and how that can actually be really hard, but sometimes very empowering. So many of our guests have talked about the fact that maybe they didn't write on to law review, or they decided that they wanted to be involved in politics, for example. And so they volunteered on campaigns throughout law school, and that's kind of what kept them energized and gave up other opportunities to be able to do that. And so I'm curious from your perspective, if you think that that is sort of a helpful tool and how you can go about, you know, we all have this problem of deciding, okay, which doors am I going to close? And being like, oh my gosh, if I close the door too early, is it going to be a huge mistake? So how do we kind of counter that narrative in our heads? And I think something that, you know, the legal culture sometimes imposes on us, and allow ourselves permission to just do that and to pursue things that we might feel more passionate about despite closing some doors.
One of the skills that we teach our students or try to is the idea of reframing things. And I'm going to like totally try to reframe your question, which I'm not sure I accept the premise that you're closing doors.
Agreed.
I don't think we ever close doors. I think if you look at like folks who are like now like lawyers who are running governments or whatever, you look at their career and it's just like there's probably a time in their life where it looks like they closed some door and then the door reopened again later on. And so for me, I think I would move away from this fear. I think that's part of, it's all about fear, right? That if you do X, then Y is no longer going to be available. So I'm going to do a bunch of things that will keep every door open forever. And in doing so, I will end up somewhere where I'm not completely fulfilled. And so I think that I would try to get folks to recognize that life isn't linear and that you can, right? I think of like students who go on, like we have a South Africa externship program and they all come back and it doesn't fit in linearly into any sort of like trajectory, because then most of them want to come back to the US and work at a firm or a nonprofit or whatever. But they come back and it's such a profound experience for them that it reshapes everything, right? About how they like view the world and in a such a deeper way than any experience could have been at law school. And so I think one is getting away from this idea of all the dots have to be line up in this way and move towards more of an embrace of paying attention to your own energy and what brings you alive, right? So my first year of law school, and I didn't know the lingo back then, but I volunteered at a children's shelter every Friday night, not law work, like playing with little kids. And I didn't know at the time, but my first job out of law school was being the lawyer for those types of kids, kids who were exposed to domestic violence. I can paint the narrative after the fact that this is all a part of, but really I just wanted to play with kids on Friday night because I needed something to fill me up and bring me energy, and the world sort of conspired that it all reconnected in a way. And so I really think, you know, it's Bridget's point about sort of energy and energy mapping of like, if something looks interesting, dive in, try it, do it. Don't ask yourself about how this is going to look to that firm job that you may not even want, right? Like, I think that's kind of the wrong way of looking at it.
I also worry that that framing ignores the price we're all paying for using that approach. Meaning we talk about if we don't do the thing, whether it's journal, law review, clerkship, a certain job, what door might we close? But we don't talk about how much stress, anxiety, depression happens when we keep ignoring what our heart's desire is to do these things that are kind of, in some ways, a performance we think we must do. Now, it doesn't mean it's not true for some people. I don't mean that. For some folks, it's the right thing to do. But why aren't we talking about the toll and the true cost that so many of us are already paying to do it that way? I look back on my law school career, and there's a phrase that ignorance is bliss. And it was so true for me as a first-gen student who had no clue what she was supposed to do and who really didn't hang out at the law school at all. And people would be like, you should do a journal. I was like, oh, I don't want to. And I just moved on. And you should do a clerkship. Oh, but I don't want to. And moved on. And I think the gift of dropping out of med school and having to tell everyone I dropped out was that I became very clear that if I didn't want to do it, if it didn't feed my soul, that wasn't a fit for me. I had no clue until I was much older, and it still happens now, that I realized some of the decisions I made while in law school were so countercultural. I wasn't trying to be countercultural. I was just being me. I was just choosing for me. Yeah. And people are like, oh, I could never do that. I could never just say, oh, I don't want to. And I was like, one, I didn't know that that was such a big deal. And now I think it is so much harder for me not to choose myself. Meaning I know what that price is. And gosh, something has to be so outrageously good for so many reasons for me not to choose what's true for me.
Well, I hope that all of our listeners can get to that point, because that is one of the goals.
Me too. And they don't need to drop out of med school to get there. Like, there are other ways. There are other ways to do that.
Although I will say it's really interesting that a lot of our guests on the podcast who have had some sort of experience early on. So I'll give you another example. One of our actually good friends from law school, she went to London and was an investment banker for a month and a half. And she like knew that she didn't really want to do that, but just got caught up in this like, oh no, well, I got this amazing job and, you know, it's going to pay me a lot of money right out of college and I get to go to London. And then she got there and was like, no can do. And she left after a month and a half, and she went and worked on Obama's campaign and like loved it and does grassroots organizing and has really connected with that. And throughout law school, she had a similar thing. She was like, I just had no problem not doing OCI because I had already had the experience of having to go something where I dropped out and decided that just wasn't what was feeding my soul. And so it's interesting that we've had a common thread with that across the podcast.
Allison, I love this distinction, though, also between trusting your gut and knowing when you're on the right path or not versus, you know, one of the things Bridget and I talked to our students about is you might have to work hard when like, so we're not at all suggesting in our framing that being a lawyer and finding your, you know, your purpose in the law might not require hard work, right? Because, you know, my first 5 years of practicing, when I was representing kids in foster care in D.C., I worked a ton of hours and there were times where I was tired, but to get good at a craft, it does require hard work. But I think it's this idea of focusing, if you want to, focusing your energy on what it is you want to do, right? Hard work for the sake of really becoming good at something that fills you up. And so, I mean, like being a lawyer is a hard skill set, right? It's going to take a lot of work. And, you know, we see it in the clinics. Our students work incredibly hard. But it's in a way what I think brings alive so many of our students is that they feel like they're directing their resources into something they really want to get better at, as opposed to doing something that someone else has told them to do. And that's just kind of, for me, it's an important distinction. I wouldn't trade my first 5 years of practice for anything, even though I worked crazy hours and all that stuff. I wanted to get good at this thing, and it set me up in a lot of ways for who I am today. And so I wanted to make sure that point's there, like right. That law school can be hard. And you can still flourish in it if you sort of invest your time in the things that you want to do.
I know you guys are big Brené Brown fans, and she talks about this concept, I think exactly what you're talking about, Vivek, which is grit versus grind. grit being like sticking something out because you want to do it. And it, you know, it might be hard like as you're going through it, but it's rewarding in some ways. You're getting, you know, filled up in ways. Grind being just grinding through it for the sake of grinding through it, perhaps because someone else is telling you that it should, getting back to that should word, you know, you should be doing that. And so I think that's such an important distinction. And I love the way that you framed it and that just the grit versus grind thing, whenever she talks about that, I'm like, oh, yes, it's true.
I often think when we're grinding too, we think there's some payoff that we're going to reach someday. When I don't know quite when that day is, I remember at my first law firm job, the partner called me in maybe 6 months in, and she said to me, because I went straight to a law firm after graduating law school, and she said to me, with the hours you're billing, you're never going to make partner. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't want to be partner. Yes, right. That's right. That's exactly right. That is not what I'm looking for. And she was kind of taken aback because you don't say, I didn't know. You don't say that. You don't say that. And she was like, oh, okay. Well, then you're fine. What you're doing, you're fine. You're doing good work. People like working with you. You're making a contribution. And I said, okay. And then I left within probably 6 more months. And that law firm partner still sends me notes congratulating me on my work. And I think when you realize, like your friend too, the investment banker, just when you realize that you don't have to say yes to everyone else's goals. Mm-hmm. Because I think when we're grinding, we just think like, oh, it's going to be worth it in the end. I think when we're doing something that requires grit, the process is worth it.
Yes, I love that.
It's an amazing distinction. Yeah. So, Bridget and Vivek, as we kind of reach the end of our conversation for now, we'd like to end with the same question for all of our guests. And I'm very curious how you're going to answer, and maybe if you're going to reframe, maybe, which would be great. We like to learn too. Is what does success mean to you?
For me, so first of all, like I think my definition of success often changes depending on the stage of life I'm at. But right now, the word that comes to mind is all about meaningful relationships. And I have sort of found that for me is all I'm looking for, whether that's with people I work with, my family, my community. And if I have those relationships that bring me joy, that's it. Like end stop right there. Like I don't have a need for anything else. That's kind of what the quest is for me.
Yeah, I think for me, it often changes, but I would say the core definition doesn't change. It changes how it manifests. And so for me, success is when my values align with how I use my time, or my time aligns with my values. And I think, you know, in different seasons of my life, different values take priority. So I'm a mom, I have 3 youngish kids. And so I'm not getting these days back with them. And so much of my focus right now is how do I make sure I show up for them in a way that matches who I want to be as a parent? And that means I spend a lot of hours working the lunch hour at my kids' school. And, you know, that's not going to show up on my resume that is posted on the law school's website, but that really matters. It really matters to me. And so I often do a gut check. I look at my Google Calendar and I say, like, could someone look at this and kind of get a sense of what I value? And if my time is aligning with my values, I'm feeling like I'm probably being pretty successful.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on Personal Jurisdiction and as part of our Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah, thank you both. Guys.
Thank you.
To learn more about Bridget and Vivek's coaching business, you can visit lawlifeprofs.com. And be sure to check out the show notes for this episode for additional information about building your own fulfilling life in the law. Thanks for tuning in.
Personal Jurisdiction is powered and distributed by Simplecast. You don't have to wait until next week to hear more. You can find us online at personaljxpod.com and on Twitter at personaljxpod. Don't forget to subscribe to Personal Jurisdiction on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen so that you can be updated on the latest and greatest from Personal Jurisdiction. If you like what you hear, make sure to rate us 5 stars and leave a positive review so that other listeners can find our show too.